You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. We have in recent months had more than one program devoted to labor and our employment law. Tonight, in conjunction with the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association, we bring you Employment Law 200, The Unfriendly Workplace. You find yourself in a job you need, but amidst harassment or bullying or sexual harassment in the workplace, can you live with it? You've run your company for years. You've never had a personnel problem in the world. Until a couple of employees square off, what do you do? What do you do? My guests tonight are both members of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Matthew Wayne, a partner in the Armstrong Law Firm with offices in San Francisco and Oakland. And Philip Person, a senior associate in the San Francisco office of Greenberg Traurig. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 in the studio. If you're outside of the local calling area, call us toll-free. We'll pick up the freight. That number is 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. Again, as always, you may call regarding any question in the topic of employment law, although tonight we are truly emphasizing the unfriendly workplace. But you're not limited to the exact point we may be in the conversation. With that, Philip, Matthew, let me welcome each of you to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
You know, we've all heard a lot in recent months about a few allegedly bad folks, you know, that they're covered in the media. Can we take a step back? And Matthew, why don't you start and just give us a sense of just exactly what is harassment?
Sure. And I think that's a great place to start, Jeff, because there have been some pretty significant changes in effective January 1st, 2019, to the California Fair Employment and Housing Act, which is the law that prohibits harassment in the workplace. Generally speaking, up until that point in time, harassment was any unwelcome conduct of a verbal or physical nature that, secondly, was motivated or based on some protected characteristic, whether it be someone's sex, someone's gender, someone's religion, someone's age, a physical disability, national origin, and those types of characteristics. Up until January 1st, 2019, the standard under which those claims were evaluated by courts was that the conduct had to be severe or pervasive enough to alter the conditions of employment and create a hostile work environment. In response to some of these individuals that you've mentioned, I'll just go out and name one as Harvey Weinstein or the Bill Cosby case, the California legislature amended FEHA. And now the definition for harassment is that the harassing conduct has to sufficiently offend, humiliate, distress, or intrude upon its victim so as to disrupt the victim's emotional tranquility in the workplace, affect the victim's ability to perform the job as usual, or otherwise interfere with and undermine the victim's personal sense of well-being.
And of course, when we're talking about these folks in the media, you mentioned Harvey Weinstein, we're talking about the accusations, what is being litigated or discussed. In a case such as his, nothing's been decided yet, but this is the accusation, and it does give rise to what some of the legislative and judicial responses are to these accusations.
Correct. And you know, there's been the very public Me Too movement, you know, about rights in the workplace. And there's a fundamental right under California law to be able to be employed somewhere in a harassment-free workplace. So when the legislature amended FEHA, and it's kind of an unsettled area of law because we don't really know how courts are going to continue to evaluate these claims. But from the perspective of someone who represents employees and litigates these types of claims, you know, often through adjudicative motions or even jury trials, I think the standard now, there is a much lower bar to prevailing on harassment claims.
And Philip, why don't you talk to us a little bit in terms of a workplace, just what's bullying?
So bullying is different from any type of harassment. Bullying really turns on abusive conduct. Abusive conduct is defined as conduct in the workplace that's done with malice that a reasonable person would find hostile, offensive, or unrelated to the legitimate business purpose. The difference between bullying, abusive conduct, and harassment is that bullying is not tied to a protected class. In California, there's no cause of action or claim for bullying at this time. While employers still have to train their managers on bullying and how to prevent bullying, they do not have to worry about there being an actual claim or cause of action against them for bullying.
When it comes to making some kind of a claim, what are the time frames involved?
So I'll go ahead and take this one. The time frame for bringing a cause of action related to harassment in the workplace is you have 1 year from the time of the last unlawful act to file a complaint with the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing. Once the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing enters what's called a right to sue letter, you then have 1 year from the issuance of that right to sue letter to then file your claim in court.
So before we get much further, let's talk about some of the various types of harassment. Who would like to field that one?
I can take that one.
Sure.
So there's different types of harassment. The one most people think about is the hostile work environment. That's when you have an unwelcome sexual advance or comments that have a drastic impact on the work environment. That could be a picture. It could be a comment. It could be touching. Something like that could compound to a hostile work environment. The other type of sexual harassment that often comes up is quid pro quo, which is Latin for this for that. It's also known as the economic sexual harassment. And that's where a supervisor attempts to trade preferential treatment at work for unwelcome sexual favors. So when I'm training our supervisors or my client's supervisors, I tell them you want to avoid that scenario. That's usually if you go out on a date with me, you may get a better promotion or a better performance review. You don't want to give any type of indication that those two are tied together when you're dealing with a supervisor and a subordinate.
And, of course, that does require – it sounds as though that requires people of unequal levels of authority.
Correct.
Can you have something similar when people are at the same level?
In order for it to be a quid pro quo, there has to be a power imbalance. It has to be a supervisor and a subordinate. But for a hostile work environment, it could be the same level. It does not have to be a manager or a supervisor. And it could be various scenarios like we talked about before. You could have the visual ones where people are making gestures, pictures, cartoons, verbal ones where there's a lot of comments that can be made that could be deemed inappropriate. And the most obvious one is the physical touching. The physical conduct, and that could be, you know, a groping or a simple hand sliding down somebody's back. That could be deemed sexual harassment. So those are the various kinds of sexual harassment that you would want to avoid.
What about non-sexual? Are there other types of harassment that would be actionable right now in California?
Sure. I'll just take this one. Any type of physical or verbal conduct that is motivated by someone's protected characteristic, whether it be race, age, disability, those are all types of harassment by which employees can bring claims, you know, in court to remedy what occurred in the workplace. And just to jump back really quickly on your point about harassment between coworkers, under California law, if a supervisor is the one who engaged in the harassing conduct, the employer is strictly liable for that conduct. If it is a coworker that engaged in the harassment, the challenge is determining whether or not a supervisor or management level employee was either on notice or aware of the conduct to establish liability for the employer.
You know, we've all heard stories lately about various politicians, and the most recent one are allegations against Vice President Biden, which it was said, well, he invaded my personal space. It wasn't sexual. He really didn't intend anything, but he made me feel uneasy. Is there any real guidance as to at what point this becomes actionable and at what point you're supposed to shake it off and move on?
The way California courts look at that issue is whether objectively and subjectively a reasonable employee in the circumstances of the victim would consider the conduct to be harassing or intimidating.
And to add to that, both under quid pro quo or a hostile work environment, the conduct has to be unwelcomed. So if you have a scenario where the victim is, I don't want to say asking for it because that's never a good term to use, but it does welcome the conduct or there's a mutual attraction there and is trying to go on a date with that person, that is a welcomed situation and it doesn't qualify as sexual harassment.
So my own practice is in criminal defense, and in areas that are somewhat analogous to this, one of the things we look to is the knowledge of the person that's being accused. Should they have known, would a normal person in their shoes know that this person doesn't want to cross this line, whatever it may be? Do similar concepts apply here?
Yes, as Matt touched on, there is a reasonable person standard. And the court's always going to ask, would a reasonable person have found the conduct to be offensive or created a hostile work environment?
So it's a kind of an objective-subjective standard. Objectively, a reasonable person, what would they feel subjectively?
Sure, and it kind of touches on why witness testimony in these cases is so vital to whether or not a claim is ultimately successful, because if there are a number of witnesses who come into court and testify that they, too, felt offended or that they, too, viewed the conduct to be inappropriate, I think that kind of moves the scale a little bit as to whether or not a jury or a judge will find that the victim in the case was objectively right, that the conduct was inappropriate, unwelcome, or unwanted.
And on the flip side, for the employer, Matt is correct. It is very fact-intensive. So as an employer, you want to make sure that you have all your facts together, have your witnesses in line for any type of proposed alleged conduct.
And a caller did ask, what is personal space? Do we have any kind of a definition, or is there a simple, straightforward definition of invading somebody's personal space?
I don't think there's a simple definition for what defines personal space. I think that the way the courts analyze these claims is they determine whether or not the physical conduct was unwelcome or unwanted. And whether it was motivated by sex, gender, race, disability, religion, age, ethnicity.
And to add to that, personal space, you're right, there's no definition for that. And I would say it's on a case by case. It's a factual scenario that the court will look at. If I'm working at McDonald's, for example, and I'm in the back in a fryer, I have a lot of people next to me, so my personal space may be smaller compared to somebody who's working in a dentist's office where there's no reason why you should be in my personal zone within a few feet of me.
In a moment, I want to turn to what I want to spend the rest of the show, the gravamen of the discussion tonight, is on what do you do? And that's both sides, and we'll get to that momentarily. But I did want to ask one last thing before we switch the nature of the topic with regard to any recent changes there may be that affect any or all of these types of harassment. Are there recent legal changes? I know, Matthew, you alluded to some a bit earlier that came into effect this year. What other changes are there in a more global way?
Well, I touched on the standard and how I view it to be a lower standard now to bring hostile work environment claims in court. Another thing the legislature did effective January 1st, 2019 is it modified the statute, which is FEHA, to hold that a single incident of harassing conduct is sufficient to create a triable issue regarding the existence of a hostile work environment if the conduct unreasonably interferes with the plaintiff's work performance or creates an intimidating or hostile work environment. And that's important because when these cases do make it to court and they are litigated, often there is a procedural motion filed by the employer called a motion for summary judgment. And what that modification of the statute really does is it says that even if there's just one incident of harassment, so one incident of unwanted verbal or physical conduct, that can be enough to send that case to a jury and have a jury determine whether the employer is liable.
from the employer side, there's definitely some new laws that employers should be aware of. In California, every January 1st, it's almost like you can count on it as the sun rising. There's going to be some new laws, some new employment laws that you have to be aware of. One of them is currently California employers who have 50 or more employees must provide 2 hours of classroom or interactive training to supervisors. This hasn't come into effect yet, but January 1st, 2020, employers with 5 or more employees must provide that 2 hours of sexual harassment prevention training to supervisors, and then must provide 1 hour of sexual harassment prevention training to non-supervisors. So that's an upcoming change that employers should be aware of. The other thing that I think employers should note is that the non-disparagement clause, which is usually added to a lot of agreements that prevents employees from talking negatively about the company. Now in California, you cannot have a non-disparagement clause that is conditioned on a raise, bonus, or other condition of employment.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. You know, week after week, we are here to educate, to entertain, but most importantly, to help. And there is a way you can help. With that, let me introduce Alice Ferris and Jim Anderson from our development team.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a very important topic that you're covering tonight, much as you do every show. So thank you and your guests for providing this vital information to our listeners. We know that this is a local service and a very specific service to the community. And Alice, this is something that not every radio station can devote time to.
That's true. And I think that's an important hallmark of KALW, is that this is a community-based local radio station, and we are here to provide really dedicated local service. And I've been really fascinated by this program, Your Legal Rights, because it is an opportunity to ask people who are experts on this topic about things that maybe you've been thinking about, maybe issues that you think have been important to you, and you want to make sure that there continues to be a place where you can do this essentially free of charge. So how many times can you get essentially free advice from an attorney? So
I don't know. We should have Jess. Ask Jeff.
And we offer that in multiple ways.
Yeah.
Every week we're here, we have experts, we talk about one type of law, one type of program. Mm-hmm. We welcome calls. And in some areas of law, people are hesitant to call on the air. Mm-hmm. Certainly in family law, for example,
sure. Mm-hmm.
We often have people that don't want the spouse they are still together with or maybe have recently separated from to necessarily hear the inside track, what they're thinking. But we do this in various areas of law. We're here every week. But once a month, we feature a program where people can call off of the air.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a private conversation one-on-one with attorneys that are sitting by to take your call show is going on in the air.
That's an amazing service. That's just amazing. So thank you so much. And I know, Jeff, that this is a program that has been providing this service. Your Legal Rights has been providing listeners with this service for a very long time.
Yes, actually, Chuck Finney started this program. It's been going for close to 35 years. It was really his vision and his genius to not only have the program talking to people, but also answering their questions and having that program off the air, which I was volunteering with Chuck for about 20 years.
Well, and we know that this is a service, much like all of the programs and the services that KALW provide you, that you are getting for free from us. And we want to provide those services. But you do know that while we provide free services, that doesn't mean there aren't costs to us providing them. So there are probably some of you who have the ability to support not just Your Legal Rights, but to support KALW by making a contribution. You can reach us online at kalw.org. KALW.org to make that contribution. And if you choose to do so, we have a wonderful thank you gift we'd like to offer.
Yes, we have a book available for you called Your Rights in the Workplace, the 10th edition. And this is really an invaluable reference for you as an employee. And so the interesting thing is they do have some sections in this book about sexual harassment, but there's also things about wrongful termination, health insurance, on-the-job safety. And so if you would like to get this Employee's Guide to Fair Treatment, Your Rights in the Workplace. It's really a wonderful guide that's available for you for a $60 contribution right now at kalw.org. So please consider that $60 contribution, which you could also do as a $5 a month sustaining member of KALW. But you have to take the first step. You have to make that first action. Please go to kalw.org to show your support.
And this is nearly a 500-page book. So if you were to flip through this book and find the answer to just one of your questions, wouldn't that be worth $60 to you?
Mm-hmm.
Here's an opportunity for you to support your legal rights, to support the programming and services that KALW brings you every day, every hour of every day, when you make that contribution at kalw.org with a contribution of $60 or a $5 per month contribution. Jeff, I'm really intrigued by this topic tonight, and I'd love to hear what your guests have to share with us now. What else?
So we'll jump right back into it then. I'm Jeff Hayden, and you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco, and again tonight in conjunction with the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association, we bring you Employment Law 200, The Unfriendly Workplace. My guests are both members of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Philip Person, a senior associate at the San Francisco office of Greenberg Traurig. I'm learning how to pronounce that better. And Matthew Wayne, a partner in the Armstrong Law Firm with offices in San Francisco and Oakland. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, our toll-free number where we pay the freight, 866-798-8255. And again, that's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question in the topic of employment law. But tonight we are really focused on the idea of the unfriendly workplace. This does not mean you are limited to call about the exact point we may be in the conversation. Feel free to call us and our guest. We're here to help. And let's go back to where we left off. We wanted to transition from really definitional areas and telling everybody about what these different types of claims might be to let's talk about basics. You have a harassment claim. Kind of walk us through. I'd like to ask each side to walk us through a little bit about what comes next. But let's start on the employer side. How should an employer really begin? They get one of these claims. How do they go about conducting an investigation, maybe answering it?
Well, the first thing, before the claim is filed, you should have a clear internal procedure for anybody who's suffered harassment to report up to management or to a supervisor, HR, whoever it may be. The reason why is because that helps with your defense. If the employee fails to utilize that procedure, that is a factual and legal basis that could assist your claim. So that's step one, is to go back, look at the record, and to see, did they use our internal procedures?
Yeah, let me interrupt you with a quick question. That begs the other side of it, is the fact that you don't have a procedure in place, perhaps something that the employee could use and say, look, they had no way to follow up on this. Why would we believe they did?
From my perspective, absolutely. You know, and there are specific defenses that an employer can raise based on the fact that they have an integrated policy for responding to and investigating harassment complaints. And if the employer does not have that policy, then it, in my opinion, it actually removes one or two defenses that otherwise the employer could utilize.
Okay, and I didn't mean to cut you off. So the employer presumably has a policy in place how they should follow through. Walk us through what they should next be doing.
Next, you have to have a prompt and immediate investigation. The law doesn't define what prompt is. There's no prompt is 15 days. There's no statutory guidance there. But as soon as you get the complaint, the first thing I tell my clients is let's get a memo in place from after we have the oral conversation with the accuser, because we want to lay out what the specific allegations are. My supervisor did X on this date, and these were the witnesses. And you have to engage in that investigation immediately. If you don't do that, that could expose you just by not doing the investigation to potential liability there. Part of that investigation, after you do the memo and then after you do the investigation, you want to give the accused party a chance to tell his or her side of what happened, provide their witnesses. And as part of this investigation, it can be done internally or it could be done externally. There's pros and cons to each one. When you do it internally, it tends to be done quicker. You already know the witnesses. You know who the key parties are. Lots of times HR knows which managers are which and who to go to. When it's an external investigator, the positive there is that it's an independent investigation. You don't have to worry about later an employee saying, well, the HR representative came out this way in the investigation because they're a part of the company. So there's, like I said, pros and cons each side, but sometimes external investigators take a while. You speak to all the witnesses, and then once you've concluded whether there was sufficient evidence for harassment or there wasn't sufficient evidence for harassment, you have to act immediately and discipline. There's different ways to discipline if there was, in fact, sexual harassment. You can suspend and require them to go to training. Depending on the severity of it, you can go to immediate termination. So there's a whole range of appropriate remedies that you can do. So those are the steps.
Now, while this is going on, what could an employer do? And we've got about 2 minutes before we need to break for a moment. But while this is going on, what can the employer do to give people a timeout? Should they give people a timeout and separate the parties? Or what are their options?
That's a very good question. And it does depend on facts. Sometimes you can separate the parties. You can have one of the individuals go to a different department. Sometimes you can suspend pending investigation. It depends on the facts. And if the facts are not that severe, you may not have to do much there besides suspending for a day and going to a quick investigation. You can suspend with pay, without pay. It all depends on the facts.
And I imagine from the perspective of the employer, a larger employer can temporarily move people into different areas, whether it's different times or different locations or different departments. A smaller employer may find it harder to keep somebody, keep them on the payroll, and keep the place running with them not on site.
Correct. But that does bring up another issue. Since we're talking about harassment and sexual harassment, an employer can also be exposed to a failure to prevent harassment. So there's a thin line there. Because if an employer knows that harassment is going on and doesn't act upon it promptly and efficiently investigate and have an appropriate remedy, then they could be exposed to not only a harassment case, but a failure to prevent harassment. So that is, as soon as you find out there is harassment, an employer should act.
Did you want to add anything into this portion? You're coming up really quickly, but I wanted to give you a chance if you wanted to chime in on the investigation that they should be doing before we move on. We've got about a minute.
Well, having just a minute, I share Philip's perspective that there's a failure to harassment claim, you know, and that employers should be aware of the fact that if they're aware that harassment is going on, that they do have a duty to take prompt remedial action or some type of corrective action to ensure that it doesn't continue. But as a plaintiff's attorney and someone who represents employees, I'm also always looking, even within the context of an investigation, whether the complainant or the victim is being treated differently or it is moved to a less favorable position or is being demoted or is forced out on some type of unpaid suspension during the course of the investigation, because that could give rise to a retaliation claim.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And once again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. You're listening to us week in, week out. We very much appreciate you doing so. And we do strive to educate and to keep you entertained. And again, as I said a little while ago, we are really here to help. And what I wanted to do is turn it over to our development team, Alice Ferris and Jim Anderson, to talk about ways that you can help, so you can help us continue to help you.
It's very easy for you to do. You can visit us at KALW.org and make a decision as to whether you'd like to make a one-time contribution to support your legal rights in KALW or whether you'd like to make a recurring monthly contribution and become a sustaining member of this organization. However you choose to support us, it doesn't matter how much you give. There are individuals who will make monthly gifts of $10 a month or $20 a month or even $100 a month. And there are others out there that perhaps are listening that have the ability to make a contribution of even $500 or $1,000. It's entirely up to you. You get to choose what you believe this program is worth and what you're able to help with. We all need to do our part to support programming just like this. Make that donation now at KALW.org, and we'd love to thank you with this excellent book.
And we do have this wonderful book available. It's called Your Rights in the Workplace, the 10th edition, published by NOLO. And this is an invaluable reference. It has a whole bunch of information in it. It's about 500 pages. And so for a $60 contribution to KALW, we're happy to send you this as a special gift. And if you go online to KALW.org, you won't necessarily see this as one of the links on the donate page. So just write it into the comments that you're interested in this book, and we'll be happy to give you this book as a special thank you. Again, a $60 contribution, you can receive Your Rights in the Workplace 10th edition at KALW.org.
So visit us now, KALW.org, and make that contribution. We do appreciate all of those folks who have thanked us so far, and we've got a few to thank this evening right now.
We'd like to thank Margit from Berkeley, who made a generous contribution online. And I do also want to thank Anna Marie Booth, who had a lovely comment about Your Legal Rights. And she mentioned, that Your Legal Rights has taught me so much and saved me thousands of dollars and helped me to help others. Although I deeply miss Chuck, I'm very grateful that Your Legal Rights continues.
Thank you.
The public service is extremely valuable. So thank you, Anna Marie Booth, for your contribution and that lovely comment.
Those comments mean so much to us. Jeff, they mean so much to you as well, to hear those type of things about what this program has brought to the community.
They absolutely do. They keep me going so I can help keep this show going. But you can also help keep this show going with your contribution as well as your comments. Jim, a couple moments ago, you talked about keeping this show and shows like it going. While I'm happy to share in the community and be a part of the KALW community, there really isn't another program like this one.
No,
one thing that drew me to be involved in this program from the beginning is the unique aspect of having people here to answer your questions on the air, but also to have people off the air where you could call in with your particular questions privately and quietly or publicly and vocally as you choose, and having lawyers that are experts in that area, often certified specialists, available at your disposal. I don't know that that exists anywhere else. Certainly it doesn't in this region. And I don't know if it's anywhere else in the state. I think we are very uniquely poised. It was the genius of Chuck Finney, and we're happy to keep it going and continue that work.
And you can help support this work with your contribution at KALW.org at any level.
And with that, let's turn back to the topic at hand. I am Jeff Hayden. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. Tonight, we're talking about the unfriendly workplace. My guests are both members of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Matthew Wayne, a partner in the Armstrong Law Firm with offices in San Francisco and Oakland. And Philip Person, a senior associate in the San Francisco office of Greenberg Traurig. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the local dialing area, our number toll-free is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call us regarding any question on the topic of employment law. In particular, though, tonight we're interested in hearing your questions about the unfriendly workplace, or if you are an employer, how you deal with it when people complain about an unfriendly workplace. You don't have to call about where we may be in our conversation. Call us with your questions. We are here to help. And we last talked about the need to conduct an investigation and how the employer goes next. I'd like to switch it to the other side. You're an employee. You've experienced what you consider something that's either harmful to you or potentially endangering your job because of mistreatment. Exactly what should you do to protect your rights, to protect your job? Who are you going to call?
Well, the most important thing you can do, Jeff, is you can engage a very experienced employment law attorney to advise you throughout that process, not just from the perspective of who do I need to complain to or what should the form of the complaint be. But once that complaint is made, it's generally the case that an investigation will then ensue, and either someone internally with the employer or externally in the nature of an independent investigator, they will want to interview the complainant. And it's so important for an employee to have the advice of experienced counsel as they go through that process. Another thing that's very important for the employee to do, even notwithstanding that, is becoming familiar with what policies exist for the employer as it relates to making that complaint. It's not the case under the California Code of Regulations that you are limited to complaining directly to your immediate supervisor, and that's especially true because in some cases your supervisor may be the one who you feel is harassing you. So there are many avenues you can take. You can complain to a human resources manager. Many companies have EEO officers. You can complain to a different supervisor. Some companies have complaint hotlines. Generally speaking, I think it is a good idea to always make a complaint in writing so there is no later dispute about what was actually complained about. But again, my opinion is you should not do that without engaging experienced counsel who can advise you throughout that process.
There may be things you don't want to say too early. Maybe you don't want to be taken out of context and to be guided as to at least how to think it through clearly, if nothing else, would be helpful, I would think.
There may be things you don't want to say in an initial complaint. It also may be the case that later a question arises, well, if this happened, why didn't you include it in your complaint? So you always want to have an experienced attorney who handles these types of cases and has experience assisting employees in making the complaints and guiding them through that very sophisticated process to give them advice along the way.
And if I could add on to that, I agree with everything you said, Matt. From the employer side, you also want to respond in kind. When they engage a counsel, even before they engage a counsel, you want to have your defense counsel make sure you have everything in writing. We've talked about why you want to have a memo in place outlining all of the points they're making and the specific allegations they're making so that it doesn't change later. You don't want it to be, I claim that I had sexual harassment from this person. I was sexually harassed by this person. And then they say later it was a group of people. And Matt is correct. Engaging legal counsel on both sides is a wise decision. So,
and I would think that you're balancing wanting to get that advice, wanting to talk to somebody. At the same time, you want to be pretty prompt and upfront with what's going on, lest somebody ask you later, why did you wait? Granted, you have a year to deal with it or 6 months to deal with it, whatever it may be in that situation. But why didn't you do something to stop it? Why didn't you say something way early on? And if you're overly deliberative and thinking about it too much before you get out there, you may be putting yourself in danger too, I would think.
Sure. And I see in a lot of the cases that I litigate and the clients I represent that there often is a delay in reporting certain type of conduct, often because an employee may have a reasonable fear that bringing forth a complaint, will result in retaliation. But I've been involved in cases at every stage of the investigation, whether it's prior to making a complaint, after the complaint is made, an investigation is ongoing, or even after the conclusion of an investigation. And it's always, in my opinion, it's always in an employee's best interest to engage counsel as soon as possible, no matter where you are in the process of the investigation.
And your fear to go to your employer should never translate as fear to talk to somebody outside about it. Nobody is going to know that you talked to a lawyer if they find that it's ill-advised to go forward. But if you delay on that, it only delays your making the claim. And well, the rest doesn't need to be said. What does need to be said is I want to take your call. Eileen in San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I work for a startup, and we're putting together an HR policy right now. And because it's a startup, you know, a lot of us are wearing different hats, and none of us is an HR expert. So is there a way to kind of distill down, like, good steps, like in a page or something, to have so that, like, if anything, you know, happens, that you make sure that you follow appropriate, you know, that you do the right thing by everybody and hopefully resolve the situation so that people are happy and can work together well again? I mean, because it just sounds very complicated. I'm just wondering, just from a very practical standpoint, like, what would be a good resource to just help us put something together so that we can make sure that we can inform people, that people don't feel intimidated, and that we also have a mutually respectful workplace? Do you have any recommendations?
Yes. First off, hi, Eileen, and bless you for working at a startup, because I know you have to wear a lot of different hats, and it's a lot of work. You're right. It is a complicated situation. The first thing you would want to do is have a clear anti-harassment policy. That's actually something that's required. It's typically something that's in a handbook. It's certainly not going to fit in one page. But that goes back to what I said in the beginning. You want to have clear guidelines for any time a victim of sexual harassment suffers from sexual harassment, they can report up to various managers, various supervisors, and under your policy, it would require you to react and investigate prompt and efficiently. So mm-hmm. That's the first step that you would need. And then after that, it's really on a case-by-case basis. We talked about sometimes you could suspend somebody depending on the facts. Sometimes you would want to suspend them with pay, without pay, retain an internal investigator, external investigator, or do it internally. So it really depends on a case-by-case situation, but you should always contact your counsel. You want to make sure also that you do an investigation thoroughly. You want to cover all bases in that memo that I spoke about earlier. You want to have all the facts, make sure you get all of the witnesses so you didn't leave any witnesses out, and have the accuser sign off on the memo, okay? And then the rest kind of leads itself. You go through and you ask each party, did anybody else see this happen? Are there any other facts I'm missing? This is kind of, I'm giving you a broad stroke here, but those are kind of the steps you want to do until you finally reach a conclusion and you realize you have enough facts to either substantiate a claim or not.
Okay, so just encourage prompt, you know, if you have anything that happens, please report it right away and then designate, you know, a couple people, and then follow through with the documentation and just make sure it's dealt with very promptly and documented.
Correct. Okay. And again, you may want to retain an outside counsel to walk you through those steps and counsel you through those steps on what you should do next, because it could vary based on the facts. So I would recommend doing that and going that route.
Okay. Well, and thank you. I absolutely love KALW. You guys rock.
Thank you. Thank you, Eileen.
Thanks.
And, you know, one thing I don't want to, you know, force this down anybody's throat, but as a beginning startup and really trying to get a handle on exactly where to start from ground zero, not when you've got an investigation, not when things are really getting started, but you want to take a broader look at the types of policies and procedures and manuals that you want to have in place, one cheap way to start before you're even ready to talk to an attorney is get a background in it. For a low cost, you can talk to our friends in the next room. They have a book which will give you a good start, and it's a pretty nominal investment. You might want to give a call to our development team. Their number is 800-525-9917. I see Jim is donning the line and ready to go. Did you have anything you wanted to add on that point?
Well, you know, I'm really intrigued by the show tonight, Jeff, and thank you for encouraging people to make that call to 800-525-9917, and we know you've got a couple of numbers to remember tonight, so here's another easy way that you can support the station. Why not visit us at kalw.org and make a contribution there? If you can make a one-time contribution of $60 or more, or a $5 or more per month sustaining contribution, make that monthly contribution, we'd love to send you this wonderful book, Your Rights in the Workplace. This is the 10th edition. This is an excellent book that is put out by NOLO. Those of you who are in the know about the legal field, you know NOLO. Jeff, it looks like we've got another call on the line.
That we do. Why don't we jump right over to Susan in Oakland? Welcome. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick question about retaliation. I work for a large organization in the East Bay and actually have a union and everything, but have a really bad bully at my place of work, and there is the ability to transfer to another place of work. Two other employees have actually transferred due to this bullying person who isn't even high ranking. And I've been asked to transfer, and I believe that being asked to transfer is being retaliated against, and I just wanted to know what your thoughts are on that.
Who would like to field that?
I think I can field it, if you don't mind, Jeff. Hi, Susan. How are you? Thanks for calling in. So from my perspective, representing employees, I mean, first of all, to have a recognized retaliation claim, you have to engage in what's called protected activity. And that means that you have to go to your employer and complain about something that you reasonably believe is unlawful, whether it is unlawful harassment or unlawful discrimination or your belief that your employer is in some way violating some statute or ordinance. Once you do that, if your employer takes any action against you that would dissuade a reasonable person from making that same type of complaint, then I believe you have a textbook retaliation claim. It's a little different from a discrimination claim, for example, a claim that some adverse action occurred because of your sex, gender, race, national origin, whatever the case may be, because in that case you have to show that the terms and conditions of your employment were materially impacted. For a retaliation claim, you just need to show that your employer took some action that would discourage an employee from making that type of complaint. So presuming that an employee engages in what the law considers to be protected activity, even a transfer that does not necessarily impact your salary or your benefits, it can still be enough to state a retaliation claim.
Great. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I see we have another call that's working its way to us. As it reaches us, I see a caller that did call in, who will identify as T, is calling wanting to know if there's a legal remedy to restore wages that person has lost for reasons of discrimination or the like, or maybe some other reason they've lost hundreds or thousands of dollars while other employers are moving up and that person perhaps not. They were standing still for an extended period of time. Who should that person be talking to?
Well, that person should be talking to a plaintiff's employment attorney, because if there's a basis to show that the employment decisions, whether it's a lack of promotion or a lack of advancement of a company, is because the employer discriminated against that employee, the damages would include the loss of income, meaning the loss of advancement within the company, salary increases and whatnot. If an employee is terminated for an unlawful or discriminatory basis, then the remedy would be to collect the wages that the employee lost during the time that they were attempting to mitigate their damages and look for another job but were unsuccessful in securing another job. And those damages can continue well into the future. And even when an employee secures a subsequent job, if they are making less at that company, they can continue to accrue lost wage damages.
With that, let me turn it to Martin in San Francisco. You're on Your Legal Rights. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Martin.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Without being necessarily facetious, I just wanted to ask you, is it the possibility that if I invite somebody for a lunch...
Martin, I'm going to ask you if you could turn your radio down. Your phone is picking up the radio, which in turn is hitting us as feedback.
Sorry. Okay, yeah. If I invite somebody for a lunch or, coffee break or something... Can I possibly be sued for a sexual harassment?
That brings us back to the Joe Biden question we were talking about earlier.
I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. So I guess his question for you is, when is it inappropriate for somebody that might not have sexual intent, but maybe somebody perceives that for some reason or another, it just makes their skin crawl?
I'll let Matt follow up with this with the new standard. But simply asking somebody to lunch or going to get coffee in and of itself is not going to rise to the level of sexual harassment. You can ask anybody to lunch or coffee. It has to be something that's tied to their sex, a sexual advance, all the other bases for sexual harassment that we discussed earlier needs to be there. That's a common question we get a lot from employers, our supervisors, is this going to be sexual harassment, simply asking somebody to lunch? That in and of itself wouldn't be. It kind of depends on the scenario. Is there some back history with that? Has there been gestures made? Has there been glares to that person? Have we made the person feel uncomfortable? So those are the things we would ask the manager before we gave advice there. But just to answer his question, in a vacuum, no. I would say no.
And my perception of that scenario is that it really depends on the circumstances. And I think context matters. Like I said, it used to be the case up until January of this year that the standard was that the conduct had to be severe or pervasive. But I'll turn back to the new statutory language where, one of the factors that can support a hostile work environment claim is whether the conduct disrupts the victim's emotional tranquility in the workplace. And I think that is just such a broad and loose standard that the door is open to bringing claims now, hostile work environment claims that may not necessarily have been as strong pre-January 1st, 2019, but I think the amendment of FEHA has really opened the door to some claims. So I think it all depends on context.
And to add on to that, it still has a reasonable standard. So in that context, without much more, I would argue that a reasonable person wouldn't feel that they were sexually harassed just being asked to lunch or coffee.
Okay, we're nearing the end of our hour. I want to turn it over to our development team if there's anything that you wish to add in the next couple moments before we close it out.
Yes, thank you so much, Jeff. This is great. I love the opportunity for the callers to have these questions answered. I mean, questions that are serious questions, and to be able to call to be able to call the number to get this advice directly from the professionals free of charge is quite a service. And thank you so much, Jeff, and thank you to your guests, those here with us tonight and those who have joined you in the past and, well, those who are coming in the future. We've been able to provide this program for those 30-plus years, and we've been serving San Francisco as a service of the San Francisco Unified School District for more than 70 years. You can support us now. Make sure that we continue to bring you great services in the future by making a contribution securely online at kalw.org. That's kalw.org. And we do have one very special thank you gift that we'd like you to consider tonight.
Yes, we've had some people who have visited us at kalw.org to take advantage of our offer for a thank you gift at the $60 membership level. For a $60 contribution right now at kalw.org, just write in the comments that you would like to receive your rights in the workplace. This is the 10th edition of this NOLO book, and this is an opportunity to get more information about things that are going to be important for you as an employee. Regardless of where you work, there are going to be issues that you might have to deal with that hopefully you won't, but this is a great resource for you to be able to have fair treatment that you deserve in your workplace. So that's a $60 membership contribution at KALW.org, or of course you can call 800-525-9917 to make that gift as well. That book is about 500 pages, so this is your opportunity to get an invaluable resource added to your library with a $60 contribution right now.
And Jeff, it's such a wonderful thing that you're bringing to the community. And I'm curious to know what it is that you have in store for us in these last few minutes.
Well, the final answer is I'd like to give each of my guests about a minute for any closing thoughts that they have. Matthew, you look ready. Why don't you jump in and go first?
Sure. Thank you, Jeff. And again, thank you, Philip, also for participating. This has been great. I think my closing remarks are basically that, you know, the environment that we're in right now, socially and in the media, I think the legislature sent a clear message in 2018 when it amended FEHA to broaden the standard and lower the standard for harassment claims. And I think courts will look to that standard now in evaluating these claims. And I think the door has been opened where claims that might not have been as strong before are stronger now. And I think the California legislature sent a clear message that each employee shall be entitled to work in a workplace that is free of harassment, and that they will have remedies if the employers do not provide that. And again, I would just underscore that if you do feel like you're being harassed in the workplace or that you're working in a hostile environment, it's so important to engage legal counsel as soon as you can so that you can get advice on how to navigate making a complaint in the workplace and participating in a harassment investigation.
And with that, Philip, do you have any closing thoughts? I'm sure you do.
Yes. As Matt said, the law has changed. And it's continuing to change. It's been a complicated area for many years now. But with the upcoming Me Too movement, there has been further changes in the law. And most employers will need a competent defense counsel to advise them. Because not only can the company be liable, but the individual in certain scenarios can be liable for sexual harassment in the workplace. With that said, a defense counsel can assist you in responding to certain claims, to training your staff on how to respond to certain claims and complete investigations, and also on how to respond to any demands or other litigation coming down the road in this context. So with that said, I highly advocate for an employer to retain a defense counsel.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, in conjunction with the Labor and Employment Law section of the California Lawyers Association, we were talking about Employment Law 200, the unfriendly workplace. My guest tonight, Matthew Wayne, a partner in the Armstrong Law Firm with offices in San Francisco and Oakland, and Philip Person, a senior associate at the San Francisco Law Office of Greenberg Traurig. I'd like to thank both of you for joining us tonight. We'll return next week with Your Legal Rights, where, as we do week after week, we'll be here to educate, to entertain, but most importantly, to help. To those who've already stepped up to help us, we thank you. To those still wishing to help, to donate, you can do so at KALW.org. And our thanks to you. And to our production assistant, Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. And most of all, our thanks to you for listening, and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.